Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today looking at medical malpractice in the Commonwealth. With more than 40,000 practicing doctors, according to the Massachusetts Board of Registration in Medicine, how good are we as a state at protecting against and following up on concerns over the dangerous practice of medicine? We started thinking about this after a Boston Globe investigation last week into a New Hampshire-based heart surgeon.
He was promoted as a star surgeon, but his patients didn't know about his troubled history, one that led to one of the worst malpractice settlement records in the country. His disturbing record left a trail of pain, damage, and death, which the hospital seemed to ignore.
That's from a Boston Globe video about their story on Dr. Yvonne Beribu, who worked at Catholic Medical Center in Manchester, New Hampshire. The investigation found that Dr. Beribu settled 21 medical malpractice claims. 14 of those original claims accused Dr. Beribu of contributing to a patient's death. That's the most of any surgeon in the U.S. over the last two decades, according to the Globe. So we want to look at this. And first up, Dr. Douglas Hanto. He is the professor of surgery emeritus at Harvard Medical School and co-chair of the Harvard Center for Bioethics' Surgical Ethics Working Group. Dr. Hanto, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And as we begin, I want to note that I am married to a practicing MD in Massachusetts. So, Dr. Hanto, how extreme is the Beribu case?
Well, I think as the Globe Spotlight story showed, this is way beyond the pale. I mean, there's never been anyone that we've known about that has had this many malpractice suits that have been settled. And I think it really is a travesty that he was allowed to practice as long as he was able to. It really was a failure of the system.
And at the highest level, explain to us what should have happened. We'll go more in depth into the setup in a minute, but just at the highest level, what should have happened?
Well, there were a number of warning signs very early on after he started his practice. He had several malpractice cases settled, four in fact, that were reviewed by the hospital. He was given reprimands. Other physicians and staff within the hospital brought their concerns to the administration. And unfortunately, I think that he was a rainmaker for the hospital. And they just felt that it was more important to keep him operating and the expose of his malpractice would have been a real problem for the hospital. And I think they just were not they were asleep at the switch.
So the hospital should have stopped it.
Well, the hospital and the QA people, it's a little different in private hospitals than it is in academic medical centers as it is in Boston. You know, in Boston, in the academic medical centers, there are very strong chairs of surgery that have oversight over all of the surgeons in their department. And their QA and QI process is very robust, and those surgeons are accountable to the chair. It's a little bit less so in private institutions where the chairs have less influence.
Okay. Sorry. No, go ahead. I was just following along with you, a little less influence. So let me ask you this. QA, just you use two acronyms there that I want to make sure people can follow with you. QA is quality assurance. QI is?
Quality improvement.
Quality improvement. Okay.
So most hospitals have a very robust way of collecting patient outcome data, identifying problems, and then getting all the stakeholders together to review what the issues were and then to solve the problem. And if that means putting surgeons under, a little tighter control or having some kind of remediation, that is part of the of the process. And it really failed in this case that he was allowed to continue on as long as he did.
So Dr. Hanto, we're speaking here with Dr. Douglas Hanto, co-chair of the Surgical Ethics Working Group at the Harvard Medical School Center for Bioethics. Here in Massachusetts, as I understand it, we have fail-safes that begin with medical training and then go through the types of fail-safes that you just outlined should happen at a hospital. And then there are also boards, like there's a licensing board. So can you just give us sort of the four or five bullets of the various fail-safes that are in place in Massachusetts?
Well, first of all, at the hospital level, as I mentioned, there are quality assurance and quality improvement people that are monitoring the outcomes. That's first. Second, there's accountability to the chairs of surgery and also to the leaders of the institution, including the board of directors. Third, there is the board of registration that in Massachusetts is very robust in terms of receiving information on really any kind of malpractice or disciplinary action. They're immediately reported to the board. Not only that, but patients can complain directly to the board about a physician or a surgeon, and the board then contacts the physician or the surgeon and requires a response. And then they determine whether any further action is required, including putting the information on the practitioner's database. And then finally, the board does have the ability to suspend or take away the medical license to practice. There's also a final thing, and that is that in the United States, most surgeons have to be board certified to practice. And the boards also can take away board certification if they become aware of disciplinary actions.
All right. And according to the Massachusetts Board of Registration in Medicine, it took action against 94 physicians in 2021, Dr. Hanto. And we know that they said that there are about 40,000 physicians in Massachusetts. Does that number, that 94, surprise you? You laid out what sounds like a robust process. Is that an indication of quality in the Commonwealth, or is that an indication of it being difficult to bring these concerns forward to the Board of Registration?
Well, I'm not sure I can say, because I don't think we know what the denominator is. Now, for example, at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, where I practiced for many years, we had an internal process of review and interventions with physicians prior to it escalating to the level where it would be reported to the board. So in my view, at least at Beth Israel Deaconess, we had a very effective process for identifying problems, remediating them, and preventing them from escalating to the point where they would require board notification or other disciplinary action. And that included having physicians resign from the staff.
So two remaining quick questions for you, Dr. Hanto. First, what's the difference between a mistake and malpractice?
Well, malpractice settlements don't necessarily admit wrong, but they generally indicate that the surgeon has done something wrong or something negligent. I think the important word here is negligence, and I'm not an attorney and I haven't reviewed these cases in detail, but it's certainly many of the cases exposed by the spotlight investigation were clearly negligent, not coming into the hospital for a patient in distress, leaving the hospital before the patient was out of the operating room. I mean, these are clear negligence of the duty to care.
And my last question for you, do you feel comfortable that patients in Massachusetts have adequate protection and adequate recourse for instances of malpractice?
I do. And I think one of the, I think that the board is a very proactive board. And in contrast to New Hampshire, for example, disciplinary actions don't have to be for 30 days before they're reported to the board. They're reported you know, any disciplinary action must be reported to the board. So I think that we do have a very good system in place. However, I think there is always the question of whether or not physicians do a good job of policing themselves. And I think that we do a pretty good job, but I do think that we could do better.
All right. Dr. Douglas Hanto is professor of surgery emeritus at Harvard Medical School and the co-chair of the Harvard Center for Bioethics' Surgical Ethics Working Group. Dr. Hanto, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we'll bring a second voice in now. Andrew Drew Meyer is here in Studio 2. He is a medical malpractice attorney and the founding partner of the Lubin & Meyer firm in Boston. Drew, thanks for coming to the show.
Good to be here.
Let me just start with your general reactions from what we heard from Dr. Hanto.
Well, I'm actually quite surprised that Dr. Hanto sees this the way he does. There is a severe problem and has been in Massachusetts in policing doctors. For as long as I've been practicing. The Board of Registration of Medicine, which is the ultimate licensing authority to deal with complaints of doctors, has been inefficient and inept and one of the worst ranked boards in the country for monitoring substandard medicine.
Who does that ranking?
There's a national organization that lists the amount. The question, the very good question you asked, is 94 doctors disciplined versus 40,000 doctors. Is that a good number? And what are they ranking it on? And what we do is on the state rankings, which is done, but it's a national organization, the name of which I'm not exactly sure of. But they do, as ranked, it's always down at the bottom. There was a period of time around 5 or 6 years ago when the board became a little bit more consumer-oriented and they were a little more careful with monitoring substandard medicine. I would venture to guess that of those 94 cases that you just mentioned, virtually none or very few had to do with substandard practice. And the problem is that the board is not effective at monitoring negligence or substandard practice. What it does is it will take care of the doctors who are doing illegal things, over-prescribing drugs, violating boundaries with patients, sexually and otherwise, particularly in psychiatric cases, because they're the quick and dirty kind of cases they can deal with. But from effectively monitoring whether or not they're practicing substandard medicine for the protection of the patients, they don't do a very good job.
So I want to parse a bunch of that out before you go on. But okay. I think it's the Public Citizens Health Research Group that does those national rankings. All right. So when you say substandard, what I feel like you're keying in on is Dr. Hanto at the very end there, Drew, talked about negligence, right? I asked him what's the difference between a mistake and malpractice. That's what you mean by substandard. Is that correct?
I do, yeah. So the legal definition, which you asked Dr. Hanto about, is really the difference between people making mistakes, which is acceptable, or whether or not they do something which is in violation of the standards of care, which are really the rules of the road that doctors go by. And if they've violated some rule or standard that they should be adhering to, that's the negligence. A simple mistake doesn't warrant malpractice.
So how do we get to the point where we've got somebody who's working in surgical ethics who says we're in great shape and somebody, and structurally, I want to point out, we picked a doctor and a malpractice lawyer, right? So we were looking for people who would present us a full gamut of this perspective. Yeah. But how do we get here?
Well, I think it's a great question. And I think Dr. Hanto simply isn't exposed to the numbers and the way in which these matters are handled. The fact of the matter is, and I think he touched on it, a couple of things that he said, if we dove a little bit deeper into it, we would find he talked about the economics of a hospital not wanting to expose its mistakes and it's bad players because they think it'll hurt their reputation and therefore hurt their economics and people won't want to come to that hospital. We find that, for instance, it's not information that's readily available or available at all, really, to patients or the public. The morbidity and mortality rounds that go on, which review the types of things that Dr. Hanto was talking about. So even though it's known within the hospital sometimes who the bad players are, it isn't known to the public or the patients. And there's no – what we're looking at is how are the doctors who are policing themselves doing it? Are they adequate, or are they protecting each other? And that's what we find more than anything, is that they're protecting each other, and they've sort of lost their way in what probably brought them into medicine in the beginning, which was to protect the patient and help the patient.
So, you know, we pride ourselves here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts of being a healthcare mecca. You're laying out some real concern about competence in the oversight structure here in the state, ranking quite low, actually. I think my next question for you then is, in general, do we have a fairly healthy, high-quality practitioner network in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
No, it's a great point. And I think that what we do have is we have some outstanding doctors. We have some of the most brilliant doctors, not only in the country but in the world. But we also have pockets of negligence, pockets of doctors in certain hospitals, particularly community hospitals, but also in the we have many cases against some of the big educational institutions, Mass General, Beth Israel. Beth Israel had a huge amount of problems a number of years ago in regard to infections, something they didn't want to publicize out of their surgical intensive care unit. But they don't want to tell the public about it because that's going to diminish the people that will come to that hospital. And there is competition amongst hospitals, and the cost is great to them if they have bad publicity. So we're really looking at, yes, we have the best and the brightest, but we also have a lot of very bad players. And the problem is that the best and the brightest aren't always willing to point out or clean the house of those people who are the bad players. And they think it's hurting themselves. They're worried about their insurance rates. They're worried about the reputation of their hospitals. And they don't point out the problems that are occurring.
We're talking about medical malpractice in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Speaking now with Drew Meyer, who's a malpractice attorney and founding partner of Lubin and Meyer. So if somebody is concerned about actual negligence or substandard care, what are their steps?
Yeah, well, they have. If they want to know who to pick a doctor, how to find a doctor who isn't been accused of this, I mean, Dr. Hantow pointed out that the Board of Registration has a website which one can go to for settlement. So that's just absolutely inadequate. The cases that are reported to the board, and that end up on websites are only cases that are settled, and they're settled after 4 or 5 years of litigation. And the only thing it reports is that there was a case settled and whether it was above average or below settlement value. That's the only information you get. And that happens after years. So if somebody's practicing substandard medicine, the patient is not aware of the fact and has no place to go to find out what their record of their doctor is, because there is somewhat of a secrecy community amongst the doctors to protect each other. And the Board of Registration really is not, as it should be, a consumer-oriented group. It's really overseen by the Board of by the Mass Medical Society, which is a group that's out there really to protect the doctors. And they stack it with people who are protecting doctors. And there's one person on there who's a person who's supposed to be the consumer advocate, and the rest are all doctors.
So Drew, you're painting a very dark picture.
Correct.
Here, right?
Yep.
And I love that
I
response.
Am.
Yes, I
yep.
am.
Yep.
So, and again, we had Dr. Douglas Hantow earlier from Harvard Medical School, who painted a different picture.
Mm-hmm.
If you could give one piece of advice to somebody who says, okay, I'm a little anxious now, I'm going to get some care that's important to me, how do I make sure I get optimal care or don't get substandard care? What's one step you would recommend patients take?
A lot of word of mouth, I think, is the best. I always say, you know, you can find out more about your toaster oven or your microwave or your refrigerator than you can about your doctor in Massachusetts, which is unfortunate. So what you need to do is you need to talk to people who have been treated with a doctor. I wouldn't go to the online reviews because those are stacked and aren't particularly effective. You can go. There are ways, but it's very sophisticated to find out how many lawsuits are brought against doctors, not how many settlements or how many make the website. But you need to talk to people who have been treated by the particular doctor.
So word of mouth.
That word of mouth is probably the best way, and results.
All right. So Drew Meyer is a malpractice attorney and founding partner of the Lubin and Meyer Law Firm in Boston. Thanks for joining us to talk about medical malpractice here.
Okay, my pleasure.